Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of InfraLogic's Crossroads podcast. I am InfraLogic senior reporter Eugene Gilligan. My guest today is Robert Poole. Robert is director of transportation policy at the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation released its 2024 annual privatization report on transportation finance earlier this month. The report found that global infrastructure funds raised over $1 trillion over the last 5 years, with revenue-generating transportation assets continuing to attract the largest share of their investments. Mr. Poole will discuss some of the report's key findings, with a particular focus on U.S. assets, and what these findings may mean as we move ahead this year. Bob, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Gene. I'm glad to be here today.
Thanks. Let's lead off. What were some of the key trends in investment from infrastructure funds, and what are you keeping an eye on this year?
Well, I think it's interesting that despite the $1 trillion markup, to cap over 5 years, we had a lower amount raised by infrastructure funds, about 30% less in 2023 than the previous year. I puzzled over that a bit, and I started to looking at their figures, and they only invested about $84 billion in P3 type transactions, which is less than they raised. So I think they may have a shortage of really good opportunities. These projects come and go. You know, sometimes last year, the 2022, there were big airport projects at JFK, and that really boosted the U.S. total. But those don't come along every day, you know, the $3 and $4 and $5 billion projects. I think another thing is that I found very encouraging, because I work in transportation policy, was that transportation infrastructure was, again, as the previous year, the largest category in the investments shown by InfraLogic data. And it was more than half, 54% was for greenfield projects. So that's a lot of things going on. The biggest transportation investment of 2023 was not a greenfield project. It was the $3 billion brownfield privatization, long-term B3 lease of the remaining non-privatized toll roads in Puerto Rico. And that was a win by Abertis, which was the operator of the others as well. So they are now the sole toll provider in Puerto Rico. But it's a small place, and it's not too surprising, perhaps, that there would be one provider. And finally, in the category of funds globally speaking, highways of the transportation projects, highways were 52% of the investment, and urban rail was second at 34%. So, and that parallels the previous year as well, with highways having airports, I think, last report, were the biggest category, and then highways.
Very interesting. Interesting facts. Bob, let's move on. Another part of your report is greenfield USP3s. And what did you see last year, and what are you looking at this year? I think you say in your report that there are some interesting and good projects to watch this year.
Yes, I think we have a bigger pipeline of transportation P3 projects than we've had in several years. First of all, what I think is particularly interesting is that there's a move toward greater use of revenue finance transportation yes. P3s. And for about 10 years, the hot thing in the United States was availability payment P3s. And I think what's happened is that the state legislators and state DOTs have figured out that those projects typically require 30 or 40% direct government support. And there's very small, only about 6 or 8% equity investment, whereas in the revenue-based projects, there's more like 30 to 40% equity in the more recent ones, and very small amount of state funding. And some of the projects are being done with no state funding at all. Tax-exempt federal private activity bonds, for sure, and TIFIA loans, but those are all, the obligation of paying for all of that is the P3 entity, not the state government. So they're increasingly a good deal for state DOTs in terms of their budgets, assuming they have enough of the right kind of projects to find.
Interesting. Very interesting. Any projects you're particularly interested in this year that you'll be keeping an eye on?
Yes. Well, first, we're going to have financial close within the next month or two, I think, for the Calcasieu River Bridge in Louisiana, which is a replacement of 70-some-year-old bridge on Interstate 10 that was only 4 lanes wide and became a bottleneck at certain times of day. And the new bridge will have 6 lanes and have electronic tolling and so forth. $2.1 billion is a big political battle over whether the tolls would be fair. And so they rejiggered the terms of the long-term, I think it's a 50-year P3 concession. And the state's putting in a little more and they're giving some local discounts, but it's still going to be basically a toll finance replacement bridge. Coming up, Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina, and Louisiana all have projects in the pipeline, which are almost all likely to be revenue risk financed. Georgia DOT is in the procurement process for the SR 400 express toll lanes, adding that to a congested freeway in Atlanta area. And then going on, they're in the final planning stages for about a $10 billion worth of express toll lanes on their ring road, the I-285, again in Atlanta. So they're building towards a whole network. They already have several express toll lanes there. These projects that I just mentioned are their first revenue risk DBFON3. So that's another sea change that we're seeing again. Tennessee is doing likewise. They could pass with bipartisan support legislation for what they are cleverly calling choice lanes, meaning express toll lanes. And there will be four projects initially, two in Nashville and one each in two other of the other larger metro areas. And they're already zeroing in on the specifics for the first of the projects in Nashville. And I'm not sure what exactly the timing is, but that they may be doing requests for information and perhaps RFPs before the end of this year. North Carolina already has one revenue financed lane, express toll lanes on I-77 north of Charlotte. They're now in the final stages of deciding whether to do a revenue risk P3 for the extension southbound from Charlotte to the South Carolina border. And the odds, I'm betting on they do this as another P3 because this is now, I was just at a conference in North Carolina last week, and the price tag for this is now up to $4 billion. So it'd be a gigantic hole in state DOT's budget if they had to do that themselves. Yes. We also have projects in the planning stages in Louisiana. They have two revenue risk P3s, including that big bridge. There's another bridge across the Mississippi, a supplemental bridge across the Mississippi River in the Baton Rouge area, the state capital. That's in getting near to the stage where they're going to have a finalized design concept and so forth. And it's going to be a toll bridge, so it will probably be a P3 as well, since they have done two others. And then finally, Illinois legislature passed legislation streamlining their P3 process, which they've never really used for a big project, and authorizing the state DOT to go ahead with express toll lanes on I-55, which would be the first toll lanes on any state in Illinois or other nearby Midwestern states. It's a milestone in itself. And finally, we also had Florida legislation to ease up on how they do unsolicited proposals for P3s.
Yes.
And a bill that extends the length of possible terms to 75 years, references revenue risk. Florida has never done a revenue risk P3. And so if they actually go forward with a project under this new legislation, that would be yet another example of the growth of the revenue risk model.
We seem to be seeing more of those, definitely.
One other factor in that is that the Government Accounting Standards Board, a year or two ago, passed a new policy that says availability payments have to be counted on the state balance sheet as liabilities. And that, in many states, is going to be a restraint on how many of those they can do. Texas and Virginia have never allowed them. And I think North Carolina may have done one, but they expressed some concerns about doing any more of them. So this is another reason why I think we're going to see more of the revenue risk and fewer availability. Places for availability, you can't do a transit project with revenue-based financing. So you need it for that. You need it for some public building things, but not, I don't think for highway projects, it's going to be very much used anymore.
Very interesting. Some interesting things to watch out for this year, definitely. And your report also covers pension fund investment 2023. And why don't you talk about that a little and what may be coming up in that area?
This is still a relatively new thing for the United States. Australia and Canada pioneered public pension fund investment in infrastructure, revenue-generating infrastructure, by the way, about 15, 20 years ago, and now have world-class public pension funds that have their own staff, that have the expertise to pick projects to invest in and so forth. In the United States, it started very slowly about a decade ago with the largest pension fund, CalPERS, investing in privatized London Gatwick Airport and the Indiana Toll Road long-term P3 brownfield lease. What I've seen in the last few years, particularly based on Infralogic reports, is a growing interest and performance of state and local public employee pension funds making allocations to infrastructure funds. I think they recognize that they don't have the kind of expertise that the Australian and Canadian pension funds have. So it's like you and I deciding not to speculate in the stock market, but to buy good, solid mutual funds. What they're getting a mutual fund in each of the infrastructure funds that they put some money with, and it spreads the risk, gives them a balanced portfolio. And I think I don't have any comparative year-on-year trends, but I'm hoping by next year's report to be able to have a scale of how much this kind of investment by U.S. pension funds is increasing. Anecdotally, it looks like a strong increasing trend, but we don't really have that documented yet.
Definitely something to watch out for. Definitely keep an eye out for that. You know, one thing I was thinking of, and a little outside of the report, you know, we have a presidential election coming up. Do you see infrastructure policy or P3s being talked about in the election or the campaign, or is that not going to come up much this year, would you say?
My impression, Gene, is that P3s are too esoteric a topic for the voters who will be being pitched by the two presidential candidates. Yeah. And I think certainly President Biden has really touted the infrastructure aspects of the things that his administration has done. So I think he will be continued to make points on that. And whether former President Trump will decide to have some answers to that, I think remains to be seen. I'm not really in a position to speculate.
We'll get our crystal ball out for that one, definitely. Well, Bob, thank you so much for your interesting insights and sharing what you learned in the report. We really appreciate it. And it was great to speak to you. And that concludes our Crossroads podcast. And thank you for listening.